The NE-File, the ultimate Patriots podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
I want to welcome to the show Mark Farinella, the Sun Chronicle. The Twitter handle is Sun Chron Sports. Go follow that. Mark, let's get right to it. The Patriots are now in their last Tom Brady-less week. They're coming off a monstrous win over the Houston Texans, where Jacoby Brissett dominated. But in this last Tom Brady week, who's the quarterback?
That's a good question. It was asked of Danny Amendola in the locker room, and he said, he just sort of chuckled and said, "Oh, you'll have to talk to the coach on that one." I really couldn't tell you at this point. They had a bit of a practice session today. There won't be an injury report today because it's a Tuesday, but the few minutes that the reporters are allowed to be out there, the kind of image they got was that Jimmy Garoppolo is still a little stiff in the shoulder. Jacoby's thumb is wrapped up a little bit, so we'll see. Could be either one of the two. Could be Julian Edelman. could be Rob Gronkowski, for all we know. They seem to find a way to win.
Well, you know, everyone knows the Patriots are very tight-lipped about a lot of things, and injury reports and otherwise. Julian Edelman was spotted actually hollering at his father for giving a scouting report basically during his days playing quarterback when he was younger. It's amazing how much that culture sort of permeates through all the team and every player to have actually a wide receiver yelling about his dad of how his son used to maybe play quarterback all the way back in high school. But I think it's still safe to say that it's probably not Edelman that's going to get the start. But if it is, he didn't seem too happy with his dad for tipping off the defense.
To be honest, I don't think they'll get to that point. It most likely at this stage of the game, a lot of it depends on how loose Garoppolo's shoulder is. Obviously, this has been a very interesting stretch of games. Jimmy came off of maybe not exactly the greatest exhibition schedule there, but you know, he came out and he just played extremely well in the first two games and really showed the command. And then, of course, he gets the shoulder jammed into the turf, and it's you don't know what's going to happen at that point. And Jacoby Brissett came in, did what he was asked to do. I think even you could see after the first half of his relief effort against Miami, he came out and had an excellent drive to start the second half. And it was you could just see that he was able to execute, again, not a very demanding game plan, but enough that he could use the numerous weapons that the Patriots do have. And obviously in the Houston game on national television, I don't think anybody in the country really expected to see that. And again, it wasn't a great statistical performance, but as the saying goes around here, he did his job. And when you have as many weapons and as many tools as the Patriots have, and when you have the defense step up the way they did in that game, it's a pretty good recipe for a victory.
Obviously, Tom Brady's been such a fixture there that everyone thinks about the passing game first, second, and third. But LeGarrette Blount, 105 yards, two touchdowns in that win. Oh, and by the way, he's the NFL's leading rusher. It seems like they've done a terrific job taking the pressure off their young quarterbacks, because Blount in the running game has been really quite terrific, and being able to let that defense rest up and be able to come after quarterbacks like Brock Osweiler and bamboozle them over the course of these three games. When you look at the scheme they had against the Texans, Belichick's seen Osweiler before, and he's been able to look a little bit, find out what he's been good at, what he's been bad at. It looked like Osweiler had no idea what was coming all game long from the Patriots. And this defense has been stepping up in Brady's absence as well. When you look at a week from now, or about 10 days from now, when Tom Brady is back in the huddle, can you make the argument that being away from Brady may have made this team more complete and more strong for the rest of the season?
No. That's a possibility. That's a pretty strong possibility. obviously these 4 weeks were going to have a built-in challenge unlike anything the Patriots have faced in a long time. I mean, obviously not since 2008 when Brady, you know, was out for the entire season after 7.5 minutes of the opener. But this was, you know, obviously they had time to prepare for this, and I still think it took a little time for the defense to get on board. I mean, they did not have a very good second half against the Dolphins. In fact, that was almost embarrassing for the Dolphins to creep back and make that a what had been a blowout, to make it into a one-touchdown game, and to basically be saved at the end by Daron Harmon's interception in the end zone. I think when you look at the way they played last week, certainly Jamie Collins had a monstrous game. He is a force, and he brought every bit of it to bear in that game. But I think you also see that the Patriots' defensive backfield isn't playing badly. And if they can get some of the pass rush, and I think, as you said, I think Osweiler was confused. I'm not sure the play calling was all that good on the Texans sideline either, to be honest. But I think there was a lot of when you have that pass rush and when you have the ability to stop the run, as they did too, I mean, it's going to make life easier for your defensive backs. And I think we saw just a complete and total defensive effort there. Now, the question is, do the Patriots fall into the pitfall there of once Brady's back, all of a sudden they think that everything's just going to be fall into place and they can cakewalk their way to the rest of the year? I don't think they'll be allowed to think that way by Bill Belichick. And I think they have to anticipate that Brady will be a little rusty right off the bat. It's funny that he's actually had a couple of bad games against the Browns in his career. I don't know if he can have a bad game against these Browns, but he will be rusty. He won't be the Tom Brady we all know and have recognized that at crunch time to be one of the best in the game probably ever. So I think the fact is to have the other aspects of the Patriots stepping up, to have a few more weapons emerge on offense, which has been good. Certainly you mentioned LeGarrette Blount. He has really been in that role, too, in the second half of the kind of the clock-killing Corey Dillon type of thing back about a decade ago when the Patriots could run out the clock at the end just by having Corey Dillon take the ball and run. Blount has shown he looks better this year. He looks a little bit leaner, although he says he hasn't lost any weight. But he definitely looks rejuvenated, and he's played that way. And certainly the benefit is there to have that guy who can take charge of a game in the second half. Receiving's better, and I think you'll see the tight ends kick in shortly. I mean, you haven't had a game yet with Gronkowski and Martellus Bennett out there on the field at the same time.
Right, and this team is still 3-0. So I ask this with tongue firmly in cheek. Tom Brady goes out a couple years ago. Matt Cassel shows up. He's a revelation. And seems like a world beater, gets the free agent contract when he leaves, and turns out he couldn't play. Brady's out this year. Jimmy Garoppolo comes in. Terrific. Jacoby Brissett comes in. No problem. We'll win that, too. Is Tom Brady really a system quarterback, and we didn't know it?
Well, I think the system helps, but obviously I think Brady grew beyond that.
Right.
And, and he's had to succeed in different ways, too. I mean, he hasn't had great receivers throughout most of his career here. He had a couple of marvelous years with Randy Moss and Wes Welker up there at the same time. And then at the beginning, you know, the Gronkowski with Aaron Hernandez out there, it looked like they were going to have the two powerful tight ends all the time. Hernandez gets himself in a real mess, and that took care of that. But I think that could resume this year if Gronkowski's healthy and you get Martellus Bennett out there at the same time. Those two guys are going to be very tough to stop at some point. I think he has adapted to the surroundings and to the weaponry that he has, and it's just basically his leadership and his demeanor, I think, that has really taken charge of things. But it's nice to see that the Patriots can succeed without him, and this is obviously something that has to be considered for the future because he's 39. He's not getting any younger. He seems to be defying the odds at this point, but we all know careers can end in a hurry. We've seen great players suddenly reach a point where all of a sudden it's just not there anymore. We haven't seen that with Tom Brady yet, but they have to be considering what the future is going to be, and they've already got a couple of ideas. The biggest problem is just going to be figuring out who to keep under contract at the right time.
Well, on the bright side, those are decisions for another day, and soon enough, they will have arrested Tom Brady ready for the stretch with a basically getting a month off vacation, and it might not even cost him a win. Mark Farinella from the Sun Chronicle, follow him at Twitter at SunChronSports. Terrific insight. Thank you for joining us today, Mark.
Thanks very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, we will be back on the other side. We'll pick up a little more knowledge from the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames, and then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona, and you can always talk about that going from the quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really. The Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. We all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at Blount. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. Almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you know Tom Brady. We're going to spot you know Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. he's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's in Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything, they've got that little bit of chip on the shoulder, and I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that, and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances. It was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo, and if you're Rex Ryan, and now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last 8 division titles, and they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they have Brissett or whoever they have in there, if you can't win now in New England, Then this creates we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC, where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings, who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10, their second statement game of the year. Despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
Well, I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in three things: defense, defense, defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They had 8 starters that were our former first or second-round draft pick. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of a gimmicks or anything you have to overcome, but it seems to me like this is maybe to an extent a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year, with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost one regular season game last year. They've already lost 2. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's pretty lofty bar. You know,
right.
To 2 games, and so, oh my gosh, you've doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That, you know, that's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously when he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of a less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, it keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example, you look at the game, Drew Brees feels like, if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he wouldn't normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, is just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws four touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then and Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was a defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week, when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach, and make sure your family gets getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
Better option here. The difference, you had the Brock, who was more physical than Peyton. Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the most, the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both. But I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after two, you know, after three starts, he's better than Brock. But Brock only had six starts. So physically and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still. But I'm impressed with this kid, the quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, you know, now heading into week four. I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman, but does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy, but the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make them go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner than Bill Belichick. Doesn't matter who they play. I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo is actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentz's and Dak Prescott's that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fish is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, you know, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But Goff's, I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing, because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touch of the game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, you know, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them, as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially if the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
John, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, it's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in a, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Breeze is phenomenal. He is the franchise. But it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen, they're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it, bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is, he's taking some hits, and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? But, you know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense. Should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes, that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. And I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.